do with, rather than the universal dimension, which was the original idea. And we'll have a similar format to last week, actually. And I'm just wondering, before we go into this week's material, if there are any echoes from last week at all. Remember, I was talking about Ratnasambhava and this jewel in his heart, the Chintamani, and that this gives him the possibility to be everlastingly giving out into the world. And we had the chance to hold a jewel to our heart and take the gesture. And so I was suggesting you might like to bring that image in this week. So if anybody had any experience there or wants to share anything from last week or any questions, we could start there. Yeah, go.
Last week, I think it was last week, when we looked at each other, didn't we? And we yes. spent silent metta. And I know we did the image of imagining the person sitting in front of us mm-hmm. and doing it. And I took that home and did that when I was in the Metta Bhavana this week, in my practice, having the person in front of me. And I found that very powerful. Mm. And I sort of had an idea that, like, sports people train mentally sometimes in order to... The fact that they train actually has a physical effect on them. And I was thinking, I can find it quite challenging to sit and look at somebody and to receive metta. And I thought it felt that by doing that, even in my imagination, it would really help me in an actual situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like practicing it in a way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Well, I've had the words from the Vipitaka Sutra that you quoted last week. May all beings act lovingly to one another, and I've really had that in my mind just throughout my day, like noticing, I could be more, you know, loving here, or I could have been more loving then.
Yes. Yes.
And also noticing when other people are acting kindly towards me, mm. and I'm not in the habit of noticing those things.
Mm. Yes. Yes, it's interesting. I had something similar in the bank. Because I found myself getting a bit impatient and uppity with this man behind the counter. And he was so patient and so gracious in giving his time to me. And I was aware again, you know, that especially with people we don't know, the so-called neutral person, we can tend to see them as a bit utilitarian. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just somebody behind a desk doing something for me. And I woke up in that moment again and really, really appreciated him. I didn't say anything, but I felt a lot of appreciation for him suddenly. Mm. There was a human being there, a real human being, yeah. Mm. Anybody else before we move on? Okay, so... the person I'm having difficulty with, sometimes it's called the difficult person, or even the enemy image, and I've come to find this really jarring, actually, because everything comes back to us. Whatever we're experiencing is us experiencing something else. That so-called difficult person may not be difficult for somebody else in the same situation. So I think let's start there, that it starts with number one here, yeah? That if I'm finding somebody difficult, then that's a reaction, and I need to change that into a creative response, yeah? In some way, just as I did with, you know, the bank, and Karuna Vapi was talking about various situations she was in, yeah? And I was reminded of this saying. I don't know who it's from, actually. It's in my book of sayings. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. So the Dharma asks us to stretch ourselves beyond our usual limits, yeah, beyond our comfort zones, really, and go beyond our natural tendencies and habitual ways of reacting and seeing the world, really, and other people. It asks us to reach out to others in a less defended and habitual way. And I brought some pictures along this evening. Some of you who come to the Wednesday class would have seen these before. There's another set there, Pranimatta, so if you'd like to start. So this we can pass around. I just wanted us to have this as a kind of inspirational image of an animal which is going beyond its natural instinct and stretching itself to, it's a monkey caring for a puppy, for heaven's sake. So let's start passing these around. You don't want it? Okay. I find the last one absolutely wonderful because he's actually picking the fleas out of the puppy. So he's going very strongly beyond his comfort zone. So the four stages of the Metta Bhavana stretches more and more and more, don't they, until we get to the person we're having difficulty and then taking it out into the world. So we're taking on a gradual path of a good stretch there, really. And it gradually gets more challenging. And it asks us to become bigger than we usually are. And there can be an idea, especially at the beginning, that meditation is about switching off or calming down. Well, it is, of course. It is about becoming calmer. But we need to also be able to face ourselves, and I think the doing this difficult stage with the fourth metta bhavana really asks us to do that. So the Buddha was quite uncompromising about how far we need to stretch ourselves, and this is a passage from the Dhammapada. Some of the early Pali. He was angry with me. He attacked me. He defeated me. He robbed me. Those who dwell on such thoughts will never be free from hatred. He was angry with me. He attacked me. He defeated me. He robbed me. Those who do not dwell on such thoughts will surely become free of hatred. For hatred can never put an end to hatred. Love alone can. This is an unalterable law. People forget that their lives will end soon. For those that remember, quarrels come to an end. So I think that is inviting us out of our kind of victim consciousness that we can so easily fall into and lapse into when we feel pained, when somebody has irritated us even, or said something unkind, or done something we don't like, yeah? But negative emotions really hurt us, and they only repeat the cycle. But if we can overcome anger and hatred, we suffer less, and there's much more chance of us being able to be helpful in the world out there. And it can have even a transformative effect on the situation from which anger or hatred arose. And I think, you know, there are some very inspiring stories out there in the world. I'm thinking of the reconciliation process that went on in South Africa, with Desmond Tutu really encouraging people to, the blacks, to really, you know, forgive what was for them, you know, immense suffering, really, for many, many years, yeah. So I find that sort of thing incredibly inspirational, really. And there is this quote, actually, from Nelson Mandela, another inspirational figure. Bearing a grudge against someone is like drinking poison, hoping it will kill them. It's great, isn't it? Bearing a grudge against someone is like drinking poison, hoping it will kill them. So I thought, just as we did last week, we had a little pause in the talk, just to do a little inner exercise for ourselves. So maybe you could think of something that is troubling you at the moment, and you can decide, you know, whether that's a bit of a superficial thing, an irritation, or whether it's a really big thing in your life, yeah? It's up to you what you take on, what you think you can kind of manage or not manage even tonight, yeah? But try and think of something which is irritating you, or even if you feel angry about something, or you're having ill will towards somebody or some situation. And just really dwell on that for a moment, and just notice, really get into it as you do, you know, in your thoughts, and notice the effect it's having on you, in your body and in your heart. Is that clear for everybody? Yeah. Okay, so we need to ask ourselves, do we really want to live our lives like that, yeah? And think of the consequences of just continually repeating that sort of thing. Would anybody like to share how that was for them at all? What happened physically or in your head? What was going on in your head?
I was aware of most was a sort of tightness, kind of constriction, and there was a location to it in my sort of face.
Yeah, so there's a tightness, there's a contraction, isn't there? There's a narrowing, and the body kind of does this, doesn't it? Yeah, like a little child almost.
Also, I noticed a contraction, but there was also some seductive sort of energy in it, sort of like, I want to be right. light, sort of.
Yes.
Power.
Yeah, great. Yeah, could you pick up on that, Beata? Yeah. It is seductive, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because we so want to be right.
Yeah.
We so want to hold on to what we think should happen here or what shouldn't be happening, yeah? It's so strong in us, actually, yeah? And it's very good to wake up to that. And in a way, also wake up to the futility of it, yeah? It's the first step, really. Mm. So I just want to read a couple of passages from, again, from this book, which I mentioned last week, which I can't recommend enough, Living with Kindness by Sangharajita. The metta bhavana is fundamentally a practice of transformation, not annihilation. The aim is not so much to obliterate our negative emotions as to redirect them. There is energy in anger, and if we are to attain the ultimate good, all our energies, all our emotions, positive and not so positive, have to be released in the direction of that goal. Rather than suppress negative emotions when we can and allow them to run riot when we can't, the aim is to transform the energy in them and integrate it into the existing stream of our positive emotion, thereby making that positive stream of emotion stronger. So it's not about suppressing the nasty stuff, it's about taking its strong energy there. It's very strong energy in anger, very strong energy in hatred and ill will. And it's about seeing that. I began a few years ago to begin to see it was just energy, actually, because there are all the thoughts going on in my mind and I'm kind of justifying myself, but actually it's just energies coming through us, and it's those that we need to transform. Although metta is in a sense the rational response to reality, in the end it is produced without cause or justification. When we practice the metta bhavana, our feelings of goodwill towards beings do not arise on account of anything those beings may have said or done. We simply wish them well. If it were otherwise, metta would be no more than a psychological thing, coming and going, independence on whom we bring to mind at any one time. As a spiritual quality, metta is not bound by any kind of stipulation or qualification or condition. It is not meted out according to whether beings deserve it or not. And I think that's another very strong point. It's not about deserving my goodwill or my metta or whatever. Quite inspired a couple of weeks ago to read is we don't need to inspire to be happiness, we need to inspire to become happiness. We don't need to aspire to be content, we aspire to become contentment in itself. And this is what the metta bhavana is bringing us towards, that we start to imbue more and more of these Buddha qualities and stabilize them, so we've got something to pull on when we are triggered by somebody, so that we don't react, but that we have this stable element in ourselves to be able to bring a creative response, a positive response. And we'll explore some of that in the meditation later on. So I was there again. I was talking last night about going beyond so-called positive and negative, because we're on that seesaw of samsara, if you like. And I was quoting what I understand of positive emotion as that bigger space of awareness. and that transcendental space that Ratnasambhava embodies for us as an inspirational figure. Yeah. So if we connect to the qualities there and bring them into the process or bring them into the meditation, we've got much more chance of bringing that sense of going beyond the habitual and the narrowness of our usual reactions. Yeah. So I was thinking, there's a lot on the radio. I tend to listen to news on the radio about plastic at the moment. Yeah, it's very much in the news, isn't it? And apparently there's a huge area somewhere in, I don't know whether it's the Pacific or whatever, it's probably almost a mile big of just collected plastic, because the currents in the ocean come to a certain point there, so all the plastic starts to get collected in this one point on the ocean. So you have this picture of this kind of pollution on the surface of the water, all the plastic is floating there. But actually underneath all that is this vast space of the ocean. Yeah. So I thought this was a fantastic simile for us, you know, that normally our consciousness is polluted by what we call the defilements, our usual samskaras, if you like, the usual ways, the patterns that we've got into through our conditioning, but also our own repeated attitudes towards things. But underneath all that is this blue sky awareness, or around it, yeah, or containing it, or whatever. And if we go to that dimension more and more, then we have much more chance to resource ourselves to be able to face these difficult situations. Yeah. So that's what the Dharma, that's what the Buddha is asking of us also. And I think we have to also at the same time, you know, when we get stuck in it, is really consider the consequences. If I keep habitually reacting in this way, each time I do that, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So we go down ruts of habit, yeah. So it's about breaking those habits and waking up each time we do it as well. Right, so we did two exercises. I didn't know whether is there anybody here this week who wasn't here last week? Oh, quite a few people. Right. Okay, so I need to introduce this a bit then. So the first week we went into pairs, and one person just gave metta to the other person for 2 or 3 minutes with phrases. Yeah, whatever they felt that person might need. So this was about the other person receiving loving kindness, if you like, from that person for a couple of minutes. And then we changed round. And that seemed to generate a lot of energy in the room, and people seemed to enjoy that. Some people misunderstood me and did it in silence, but I had a great time. So last week we did it in silence, and that also seemed to work for pretty well, so I could see everybody really. So I thought we could build on that this week by going into pairs again, and you must see how you manage this. And you have a choice here. If you don't want to do this as well, you can just sit and do it yourself. But what I'd like us to be able to do is you think of, it could be that same situation you were sitting with just now, yeah, that came up for you, the grudge or the difficult situation. Yeah. And you're going to talk about that to the other person. And the other person is just going to sit there in silence, giving metta to you. Yeah. So we need to have confidentiality agreements here, because you may be sharing some personal stuff. You can leave out names if you want to. You can just describe the situation without saying names. I suggest you don't take anything that is something to do with somebody in this room. But I doubt whether that will happen anyhow. But I think whatever we share with one another stays in this room. Yeah, it doesn't get repeated out there. So I think that's important, because these may be slightly delicate things we're sharing. But having said that, you can share just an irritation of some kind. So take it at the level that you feel you want to and you're comfortable with. Yeah. Go very deep if you want to. Get into something. As long as you don't start throwing things around the room. That's right. Yeah. So is everybody up for that? Or is anybody not wanting to do it? Oh, great. Good. So I suggest again you try and find somebody who you don't know so well, if possible. I know that's not possible for some people. But just find a partner and somebody you don't know at all, or you don't know too well. Or if you prefer to do it somebody you know, that's okay as well. All right? Until I ring the next call. You started already, so then you have to start again. Just decide who's going to go first, and then you've got a couple of minutes just to talk about this situation. Now, the person listening, obviously you've got your empathy, you're putting yourself in that person's shoes, yeah? You're almost becoming them, this idea of mind maker, mamaki, yeah, that we've been talking about. Yeah, you're not saying anything, but you can have eye contact, you can smile, your body language can be responding. Yeah, so don't sit there like a stick. Just be receptive, have your heart open to them, all right? And just completely no judgment, please. Absolutely no judgment about this, yeah? That's your task. And just be available completely to them as the Buddha would. Be a Buddha for them. For a few minutes, all right? Okay, off you go then. Listening, you're not there to give any advice, yeah? So try to resist talking at all if you can. I know you might need to check something out with them if you're not quite understanding, so that's okay. So just be a sounding board, an open space for them to share what's going on for them, okay? And just really open yourself up to them completely as you can. Without any reservations, all right? And you're relaying kindness to them all the time, yeah? Okay, off you go then.
I go every year, but it's just...
have a little bit of general sharing around that. So, anybody like to say how it was to be received in their difficulty? What was the quality that was coming towards you from the other person?
I was explaining something that has been very, very difficult in the last few months. And Rob was sitting there, and actually I found myself much more able to describe the situation in a well-meted fashion than I can in my own head, or to my husband, or in the vicinity of the people that are party to the situation. So it was very helpful, and I was also able to hold in mind exactly what you were saying, because as you were introducing the subject this evening, I am exactly in that position at the moment, so it was perfect for me. So I was able to hold what you were advising and stating.
Good, thank you.
In balance with that, so it was very helpful.
Yeah. So, because one experiences that in a counselling situation, you know, we all know it's wonderful to be heard, isn't it, and to get something out. Was there any anything different from that for you?
I didn't feel like I had to defend what I was saying.
Sorry?
I didn't feel like I had to be on the defensive of what I was saying, like to justify why I was saying it. It's just, I felt like the other person was judging me.
Right. So you felt that tangibly, yeah?
Yes, yeah. Just able to say it without thinking of, you know, how to defend yourself from the judgment as well.
Right. Yeah. And did that something relax in you because of that? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
I think when we're judged, then we tighten up again, yeah? But if the other person is just simply being a springboard or actually even bringing kindness to our situation, then we feel more at ease, yeah? Yeah, we can open even more, yeah? So, anybody else?
I was bored with hearing myself say it. Steve was very good at listening and empathising, I'm sorry, I just found it really tedious, but maybe that's because I just realised how often I must go through that story in my head,
yes,
as well as to friends and other people who know me, I just realised that I don't want to do that anymore. So that was, you know, that was quite a good realisation for me, and a good outcome was, you know, and when you said about we get into victim roles, you know, I know last week I started a course and we had to tell our story, and afterwards I just felt so miserable because I just thought, done it again. I told people, you know, just what a victim I am. And actually, I don't want to do that all the time. So I need to work out another way of being and another way of communicating who I am without going back over all the stuff, however far back I go. So, yeah,
it sounds like there's a lot of energy behind your aspiration there, yeah, that you really want to change something and shift something here. Yeah, it's great. Thank you. Anybody else want to share that? Don't hold back. Don't be shy. There's a lot of people, I know.
I felt that by being given permission to say all of that stuff, it kind of took the energy out of it a bit, somehow, like it being okay. And I mean, I've seen lots of counsellors, but maybe I've always anticipated some kind of judgment or something, but it just felt like I didn't want to start stamping my feet and going, oh, I hate that person. I just felt kind of more able to hold what I liked and what I didn't like about them at the same time.
Right, great. Who was giving you the letter? Who was that?
Annie was.
Okay. So how was it for you in that situation, listening to her, and what was going on for you? How was that?
I was just really just trying to stay with Jemima, what she was saying. So I didn't really feel I was in it. I didn't have my commentary or anything.
You were putting yourself in her shoes and totally with her experience. Yeah. Mm. Mm, great. So I think this is a great gift we can do for one another, really. Yeah. So anybody else want to share how it was to be receiving the person with metta, with kindness, in silence? How was that?
I felt incredibly lucky to be in the presence of someone who was very consciously willing to acknowledge a situation that they want to change in that regard, and actually really incredibly proud.
Sounds you were really touched by that.
That's a surprising thing to hear, but it's a lovely thing to hear.
Anybody else?
I found it difficult not to respond verbally.
Yes.
There was a very strong urge to sort of say, just to add that dimension to it, and to hold that back was like, what else can I do? It was a bit of a sort of a challenge. It's like, no, don't do that. Such a strong reflex to go, oh yeah, or oh that's really bad, or how did you feel? Just all those sort of things. It's like, no, got to do something else. It was it's challenging and but interesting in a way to sort of like have to do that as an exercise. As a, oh, there's other things you can do.
Because I think we can, it's very understandable how you feel, and I think most of us would want to be doing that normally, to give the person some acknowledgement that we really are listening, but it can take them out of their own space if you do that. So just to allow them to be in their own space with this and hold back, I think is very helpful in my experience. Did anybody find it really difficult or didn't enjoy it or didn't get anything from it? Oh, well, that's encouraging, isn't it? Good. Okay, so let's just move on now. We just do one more thing before tea time. So if you'd like to just go back to your places. So, what that person was doing for us with our difficulty, we need to be able to do for ourselves. And we need to be just witnessing, in a way, what's going on, without having a conversation with ourselves. This is, it's a parallel thing there. Because this is what happens most of the time. We're having a to and fro conversation in our heads about the pros and cons of the situation. Yeah. So we need to be able to be impartially there for ourselves in that kind of witnessing space, if you like. Just holding what's going on. So we'll just have a little go with that now, and you can take, it may be that this situation's gone a bit stale on you now and you're bored with it instead, in which case you might need to take something else. But otherwise, just carry on with the same situation, because the more you work at it in different ways, the more it will just dissolve of itself. It won't bother you anymore, actually. That's what tends to happen. So just bring yourself back into this scenario with this person or this group or this situation that's troubling you still somewhat. And it can be just something mild, it can be something really, really existential if you're prepared to go there. Yeah, you feel you can and you want to. So just go to the level you feel you can manage reasonably well. And just really acknowledge what's there for you. Try not to block it out in any way, but really, really go towards it full blast. And really try and stay with whatever arises, particularly in the body. Just notice what's going on, the tight areas in the body, maybe around the heart, solar plexus. Really sit there with it in the way that person was sitting there for you. So just as Sangharakshita was saying in that passage, we need to contact the energy of it. So see if you can, and this you can do in the body as well, feel the energy in the body, or in the heart, or even in the head, wherever it's strong. And breathe into it, breathe with it. And if the thinking is very strong, the narrative around the thing, try to loosen around it. There's a phrase called unhooking. See if you can unhook your identification, this need to be right in this situation. Just see that for what it is and relax around it, loosen it, unhook from it. So we're acknowledging the experience without getting over-identified with it at the same time, or indulging it. And you don't have to believe in the stories around this or buy into them. They are actually pretty boring in the end. Just like that plastic on the surface of the ocean, to see all this stuff like that. It's collected, it's debris, it's rubbish. And underneath that is this vast ocean of being, the ground of your being. So feel the ground underneath you to give you some stability within the sense of this experience, this situation. Trust that you can stop poisoning and polluting yourself. And if there's still quite a lot of heat in it, and you can do this anyhow, it's just on the in-breathe, breathe it all in, acknowledging it. And then on the out-breath, just loosen, unhook, let it go. And just keep doing that for a little while, breathing your poisonous thoughts, your hurt, your blame, everything around it, and then just breathe out through into the whole body, loosening, letting it go. Give it away, you don't need it. Grow into a bigger space. Feel the stillness and the quiet behind the experience. And now let's place that person or that situation right in front of us, as if they were sitting in front of us. We tend to make them into an enemy image or a cardboard cutout figure, quite an inhuman image, really. So just try and see if you can connect to this person as another human being, a conditioned human being. Conditions playing out around them. They don't have to be perfect. You can see them, warts and all. try and put yourself in their shoes with all their fears and struggles. Breathe them in, breathe the whole thing in, and breathe out kindness. Breathe out forgiveness, compassion, understanding, all these wonderful Buddha qualities. And if you found, maybe you found some resolution, or maybe you feel a bit calmer, or maybe there's been a little shift, and just come back to yourself and notice how that feels. Tea time, and for those who won't be coming back afterwards, I just would encourage you now this week to go on working in this way as far as possible. If a difficulty comes up, or if you want to carry on working with this situation, just try out a few of these things. And the whole recording will be on the website if you want to go through it again. I will be doing a led meditation afterwards, taking us through the whole Metta Bhavana in this way, lightly led.